Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Adress. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, as well as visit the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We invite your comments to me at rabbiadress@jewishsacredaging.com. And if you go to the homepage at jewishsacredaging.com, you can leave a voicemail message if you so choose. And it is a pleasure to welcome to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, Dr. Gary Stein, a professor at the Wurzweiler School of Social Work at Yeshiva University and the director of the Rabbinic Certificate Program in Gerontology and Palliative Care, and Rabbi Stephen Kroll, the program coordinator for this project. Welcome, guys. Nice to see you. And thank you for coming to the studio all the way from beautiful New York. And we're all together at a North American Association of Jewish Chaplains Conference, which is being held here in southern New Jersey. So, Gary, welcome. Stephen, welcome. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Adress.
Gary, you were here about a year ago when this project was just in its embryonic stages, talking about the what ifs and maybes and what we hope to do. And so I'm very happy that you were able to come back a year later and sort of bring us up to date on where are we? What have you done here? How has it been for this year? Is it everything you wanted it to be? And just talk to me about that.
Okay. Richard, about a year ago, we sat and met. Going back a little further, a year and a half ago, the dean of my social work school and a funder very interested in Jewish causes got together to think about how we could bring so the concerns of older adults, the palliative care concerns, people who are involved in serious illness and their families, how we could bring this background to better prepare Jewish clergy to work in the community. A year ago, we were putting together the curriculum, thinking through recruitment and doing outreach and planning for startup in the late fall of last year. We have now nearly completed the first round of courses for our first group of rabbis, recruiting for a second group coming up in next fall, and really pleased to provide this opportunity to get the word out to the community.
So let's do this real fast. If somebody hears this and is interested in enrolling in this, where do they go to get the information?
Okay. The timing of this is perfect. Come early June, we're very honored to have Richard and his colleague, Rabbi Dale Friedman, running a course for us called Aging in the Jewish Community. We're also running a second course called Coping with Loss about bereavement, which will be starting in early June. For those people who are interested perhaps in enrolling, they could go to our website at yu.edu/Wurzweiler, and we could spell that later on in the session. And you can find out more about the program. We have an application that would take about a half an hour to complete, and we can get you enrolled in the June courses with Richard and Dale, which would be an excellent opportunity. We're also just so fortunate to have the support of a major funder, so that rabbis and cantors and rabbinical students who enroll in our program are eligible for very significant scholarships that will make the financial participation in the program quite minimal.
You mentioned something I really want to pick up on, because there may be some rabbinic students. Student rabbi, what about student cantors? Are they also eligible?
So if you are a rabbi, a cantor, getting training, a rabbinical student, cantorial student, or a chaplain, you would be eligible for one of our scholarships.
And just to be clear, this is non-denominational, right? It's not just—
Yes.
So anybody?
Yes, from Reconstructionist all the way to Orthodox.
Which also begs the question, anybody who claims to be a rabbi, or is there some sort of vetting as to— Because there's so much of this, I mean, let's be honest, there's so much of this around. People coming from a variety of different seminaries, mail order seminaries, other seminars. Is there some sort of, in other words, is there a group of people who vets or looks at each application?
Yeah, we look at the application. We look to see essentially that one is ordained, We look to see what I particularly look at. We have a very, very brief essay that takes about maybe 15 minutes to fill out. It's easy to do, but I look to see that there's a true interest and commitment to working with older adults, to work with people in hospice and palliative care, so that these courses are really just right up your alley in terms of serving the community.
And I think it's important to understand, as you talked about, you don't have to wait until September. You can
come in towards
the end of this and just be rolled over to the next cohort, correct?
That's right. The classes do not have prerequisites. So essentially, one can come in and take Richard and Dale's aging class and our bereavement class. And then in the fall, the Philosophical Foundations class and a basic course in gerontology.
How many classes do I have to complete in order to get my certificate?
The certificate program is six courses or 18 credits. People can take all or as many courses as they wish. They could take one or two classes for each cycle.
Okay. Steve, you're the program coordinator.
Yes.
Okay. And you know, us people down here in South Jersey, just explain that to us. What, you know, what does that mean?
I believe it means development, developing the program.
Okay. Recruitment.
Recruitment and really reaching out and connecting to, you know, the various, you know, rabbinical organizations and community organizations to let people know of this very special opportunity.
Well, the recruitment then begs the question, do I have to, let's suppose I live in Baltimore. Do I have to get on a train and go to Yeshiva University and sit in class and then come home? Or is this online, half online? What's the logistics of the certificate program?
This is online. And one of the things that I think is so powerful about this program is that it was really constructed to be sensitive to the lifestyle and demand of a rabbi, somebody who is working. So not only is it online, and not only can you take it anywhere in the world, but really any time of day, from what I understand, really, you can take this. So this is very convenient for lifestyle and, like Dr. Stein said, also fun, you know, also to in terms of affordability. This is very affordable compared to other social work programs, extremely affordable.
Well, since you opened the door, counselor, how much is it going to cost me to enroll in this program?
It's $810 a course for rabbis and cantors and $500 a course for rabbinic or cantoral students.
And you alluded to this. Is there scholarship money or subsidy?
That is the scholarship. Tuition at as a private university, tuition at Yeshiva University is considerably more than that.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to speak to that, I have the honor, and I'm a very proud alumni of Yeshiva University, of the rabbinical school, and of Wurzweiler School of Social Work. And the amount of money that a rabbinic student is paying for essentially one third of an MSW, mm-hmm. I believe it comes out approximately to about $3,000. And if you're not a rabbinical student, then that incredibly subsidized amount, I think it comes out to about $5,000 or a little less. To pay that amount, and you could still apply for a scholarship if you feel, I suppose, right, if you're eligible.
That's right.
Right, you don't lose that opportunity to apply for scholarship. But to pay for one third of your social work degree for either $5,000 or $3,000, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Steve, you're also, if I'm not mistaken, we talked a little bit about this on the way over. You're also you have your own practice, private practice?
I do. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and my practice very much focuses on gerontology, palliative care, and bereavement.
Okay, so this is a focus of the program. I mean, the certificate program is really, you know, focused on taking clergy, saying this is a way, this is something you're going to be dealing with almost on a regular basis, especially chaplains, etc., but pulpit rabbis, cantors on an increasing basis. What are your findings, Steve, in your practice? What are the greatest challenges that you think that a clergy is going to face dealing with families going through these issues, palliative care issues, hospice care issues, that the program can help embrace, if that's the right word, but guide and be a pathway and a help and a support.
I think the tremendous value is the fact that the program will allow the student to become more literate in these crucial topics. I do believe that the rabbinical schools in general have started to address gerontology and palliative care. And I don't want to take any credit away from any of them. But I think there's a limit to how much someone is going to gain from a rabbinical school. And obviously, having professors and teachers, experts in the field who are up to date with the ever-changing world of healthcare and are involved as well in clinical work, working with caregivers, that will help a rabbi, invaluably.
Yeah, well, look, the caregiving, just from my own work in Jewish Sacred Aging, when we go around North America, it's still the number one issue. No matter what subject is on the title, invariably, some conversation, if it's not on the exact caregiving workshop, is going to come back to how do I take care of my spouse, my mom, my dad, God forbid, my child, because it's just a family systems issue. Gary, how does this program help prepare a student to deal with that whole family systems issue? You know, not just the patient and, say, the caregiver, but the spouse or the child, the children who are affected by all this. This is all part of the whole gestalt, isn't it?
I think that's the advantage of interprofessional education. We bring together both a social work and a spiritual / rabbinic perspective to the course. The caregiving issues in dealing with older adults and people facing serious illness are enormous, mm-hmm. whether it's helping people to live independently in the community for as long as they can, helping to think through if we need to consider transitions from home care to some kind of residential care or long-term care, and then looking at the various end-of-life concerns that come up, focusing on counseling people around advanced care planning, or thinking through when it might be time to move to hospice care as part of the best, most compassionate approach to the last few weeks or days of people's lives.
Can you walk us through real fast the content of some of these classes? Because you've alluded to not only the caregiving aspect and sort of like making plans at the end of life. But if I'm not mistaken, there's also a psychological approach, some of the other classes that you were teaching in the fall.
For example, palliative care is a very interdisciplinary course. You need to understand the psychosocial issues that that patients who are seriously ill and their families are facing. One needs to have some understanding of the medical issues. There are legal issues involved in advanced care planning and advanced directives. There are religious and spiritual issues involved in meeting the spiritual and existential concerns that patients who are near the end of their life frequently have. So within an 8-week curriculum, we try to bring in all these different components, and it makes for very exciting learning. The approach is online, so a lot of the learning takes place on what's called a discussion forum, where students get the opportunity, they're presented with, they read the material for the week, and they're presented with a case scenario or activities or examples and to reflect on, and then each student reflects back to each other, and it's an ongoing dialogue back and forth and back and forth between the faculty and all the other students. In addition to the online, the opportunities on the course page, students have let us know that they really like the opportunity to meet each other. Mm-hmm. So we provide a couple of classes on technologies like Zoom, where students can actually be talking to each other in live time to think through the issues.
So I know we're going to try some of the Zoom stuff with Dale and I on a variety of different levels. But this idea of, where are the students come? Are they the students in this year's cohort, are they spread out all over North America? Are they more in the corridor? What did you find?
The students in this cohort are mostly from the Northeast, just coincidentally, yeah. But they don't need to be. We have one student who is in Michigan. We have one student who's in Jerusalem. Okay. People are spread out. The only limitation in being in the program, besides this is geared for clergy, is students need to speak English. Because, if you're in France, for example, this still will be conducted in English.
Oui. C'est bon.
I see you're multilingual.
Oh, yeah, that's about it. anyway, the walk me through, both of you, the technology behind this online learning. I mean, Steve alluded to the fact that if I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I can't sleep, but something had, I just had an idea for one of the discussion prompts, I can get up and go to my laptop or my computer at 2 a.m., no matter where I am, and I'll just fill in that. I had this great idea for this discussion. It's not all at, we're meeting at X time, correct?
That's right. For those who have not had the experience of online education, it's like you have a self-contained course. So when one logs into the course, it's divided by modules that are like a syllabus. They're all topical areas. You click on the module and you have access to all of the readings, and you have access to videos or lectures that a professor might have posted. And then the professor typically posts a discussion page, and it's reflective exercises for students to provide their own input. Think of it as a classroom. So if you had a professor in front of the classroom, they would be presenting scenarios, for example, to the class to reflect on. Well, you're not there face to face, but you are there, but the professor's presence is still there, and it provides the opportunity within this virtual world for students to be reflecting. So a student posts their observation to the class page. Other students then put their posts on, and then they reflect to each other. What we found, for example, one of our faculty shared with me the gerontology course that's ongoing now, and she showed me, and I was just amazed at all of the back and forth online between all the students with each other and with the faculty member. It's quite extensive, and it would actually make for an interesting study to follow some of the dialogue and how people's thoughts about issues progresses.
So we're almost under the first cohort or first year. What's your biggest takeaway as the director of this program?
My biggest takeaway is to find a way to calibrate the course in a way that makes sense for the busy lives of clergy who are balancing their congregational work, their family work, their other professional activities. We initially developed the program to be intensive credit courses, the exact equivalent of courses offered for our MSW program. We have found that we need to streamline the courses a bit and make them and really prioritize what is the material that that students really need. Mm-hmm. What are the readings that are most practical for the problems that clergy are facing? And how to make the dialogue a little interactive and may I say, fun, too.
Have you been satisfied with this year?
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess if I had one thing I would like for the future, we have we're prepared for 30 scholarships for 30 students. And we were able to provide scholarships for a third that number for our first year. I'm hoping that we can really grow the program next year. And we really encourage those of you who are listening to this podcast, if you think you might have an interest in the program, please reach out to Stephen and me. We'd like to talk about if this program works for you to get you enrolled.
So let's do that again. How does somebody get involved? How does somebody contact you who may be interested in learning more or enrolling in this program? What's the procedure?
email me, Stephen, STEVEN.KRUL@yu.edu.
And that'll put you in touch with yourself and the program.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Stephen, you're going to be you're in charge of recruiting. Okay. I hear this or I see a flyer and I'm in the pulpit. I see this is happening. My congregation is aging. I'm dealing more and more and more with issues like this. But it's time and I'm overworked and I'm by my, I don't have any assistant and I'm 400 members and I'm really working very hard. I pick up the phone, I call you or I email you. Why should I join this? Why should I enroll in this program? Tell me why.
First of all, there'd be a tremendous disadvantage for anyone that's doing meaningful rabbinic work to not have this knowledge base. And I understand the demand of the schedule of a rabbi. However, I actually think that as a rabbi continues to do their work, if they don't understand what they're working with and what they're dealing with, you're going to probably burn out quicker because of compassion fatigue. So you might actually save yourself energy to understand what you're working with. And many studies have proven this. And in addition to that, very often in counseling, and this is also discussed pastorally as well, transference, counter transference. If you see, and Rabbi Address, I believe you would totally relate to this, as an accomplished community rabbi. You see a baby that's born, right. And you've known that baby from the day that they've been born. No, you don't think that they're your son, but you've seen that child grow and blossom. And I'm just making this up. They're 27 years old, and then they develop a diagnosis. What does that do to the rabbi? You see this 27-year-old with a brain tumor, loses his ability to remember his name. What does that do to the rabbi who stood there on the bima, with the parents, the grandparents, all the hopes, the dreams? What does that do to you? And if you can't separate your own stuff, which would be totally human and understandable, how are you going to guide your congregant, their parents? So my first point would be, I think that if your issue is that you're really tired and you're worried about your time, then you really need to take the course, because your congregants hopefully will get older. And as they get older, their care and their needs are going to become more complicated. Your flock is going to become more complicated.
Well, here's another rumor. That the clergy themselves get older. So since you raised this issue, how is this certificate program geared? And this may be something that may be emerging out of the first year to deal with my own, when I have to bury that 27-year-old kid who I bar mitzvah and confirmed, which all of us in the pulpit or have been in the pulpit have done, or I'm going to visit Mrs. Goldfarb in the nursing home, and Mrs. Goldfarb is only 10 years older than I am, and I walk out of there saying, holy expletive deleted, is this me? And who's going to visit me? Where in the program is this sort of like personal journey of the clergy being addressed, or is it something that we've now learned that we're going to have to deal with next year?
I think the self-care issues are touched upon in the classes, but I think that's certainly a great area for even more development for the next go around. The discussion forums is a good place to bring that up, because that provides the opportunity for people, for students, for clergy to talk about what are the issues they're now dealing with their congregants, and reflecting on how, using Stephen's word, the technical term of counter transference, what that means for the rabbi himself or herself. How does it reflect on their own personal concerns and background? And to really reflect on that. We've tried in the curriculum to address the range of issues that face people working with older adults and seriously ill people, from having a course looking at the basics of counseling and developing counseling skills, basics in terms of gerontology and elder care, basics in terms of palliative care for serious illness, a course in coping with loss that addressed bereavement issues, aging in the community, in the Jewish community that Richard, that you were and Dale are teaching, to really reflect on what is uniquely Jewish about aging and what kind of special services are available to people in the Jewish community that reflect sort of a Jewish perspective.
I know Dale and I we're going to try to cover a lot of bases, everything from the textual approach to end of life stuff, but also to health and wellness and new rituals. And the huge chunk that I think I'm supposed to do on caregiving, mental health as well. So we're trying to really focus on a lot of the, and the readings are, I think, from Dale and both the programs, the classes that Dale and I are teaching, and we're doing it separately, each doing four modules, a lot of text-based, so people will walk out of there understanding where a lot of these issues emerge from the Jewish community. Steve?
Yeah, just to add to what Dr. Stein is saying, as someone myself who does have ordination and I also have an MSW, for me, having that combination over, you know, the last 10, 12 years, the greatest advantage I feel that I've had in my work, having that MSW along with the ordination, is that my MSW classes were always taught in the framework of empathy. I mean that clinically. I understand, obviously, empathy is a Jewish value, but I mean beyond the value of it, the clinical application of empathy, I think, really helps with a lot of other issues. Like, for example, your question, the rabbi realizes, I'm only 10 years younger than Mrs. Goldfeder.
Right.
You know, wow. What do I do with that? And I think that the skill of empathy, of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes in situations that you can't relate to and situations that you can relate to in both scenarios, and saying, how would that feel for me? And then see if you could effectively bring that to help somebody else. And when you realize that you're hitting, let's say, a roadblock to help somebody else, that helps you to have a greater understanding in terms of what is it within you that's stopping you from helping, right? So that allows you to kind of work on some of your own stuff through that lens of empathy. Social work is so good at teaching clinical work through empathy. And I think that the rabbi will gain so much by learning how to apply empathy. Rabbis have an enormous amount of empathy, but to clinically apply it, it is going to help so much. You also asked me before, why would a rabbi want to take this? I give you one reason. I want to give another reason also. You're getting 1/3 of a social work degree. So if you wanted to continue, you could. If you don't, that's fine as well. If you don't continue, I have found in the world of hospice and bereavement, where I have spent over a decade doing that work, I have found, and the Jewish community does well with a lot of programs at bereavement, but I have to give credit where credit's due, certainly in New York at least. A lot of churches do an incredible job with bereavement programs. They really do. Mm-hmm. However, I have found, and this is true for all clergy, not just in churches, I have found, however, at times when I would, as a social worker, when I make a referral for a program being run by someone who got the training from, let's say, a church type of organization, like a, some type of clergy member, very often they're coming back, not always, but at times they're coming back and saying, I think I need a different group or a different counselor. And then they're telling me that the person running the group was bringing some of their own stuff too much into the group, like they were referring too much to the loss of their spouse as an example of how to cope with spousal loss. You know, so the separation of, you know, your personal self and your professional self, that's a social work skill. And to not have it might get in the way of, let's say, running an effective support group or effectively doing counseling, because you keep referring back to your own stuff.
Right.
So
it's that boundary issue.
It's that boundary. I got one of the greatest social work jobs that I had so far in my career. I actually got it because they wanted a Jewish bereavement program to be run at this specific hospice. And a lot of the chaplains didn't actually feel confident enough to run a support group. But I have an MSW, so I'm comfortable with running a support group.
Right.
So even if you don't continue with the MSW, which may give you all types of advantages for your career, you might be more effective in your career having this skill set, and you might do more just having this.
Please let me elaborate a little bit what Stephen just said, because it's so important. In addition, the program will help participants be more effective in working with their congregants, appreciating the clinical skills that social workers bring to their work. This leads to what some of our students have been dealing with in taking the program. We're working with a small group of students, about maybe 10, 12 students over the last half year. A few of them are really focused on being more effective with their congregants, but some of them are looking to explore their careers a little further. Some of them are thinking more, well, maybe I would like to develop more of a clinical specialty as part of their practice to the spiritual work they're doing. Some of them are also thinking of some very unique career opportunities. One student, for example, is developing her own care management organization to work with older adults. So this is part of career development. It's learning about working with elders and people who are very ill, but it's also trying to think of what kind of opportunities might be available out there for me with my rabbinic background.
Right. I think this is really important to understand, underscore, that this is professional development.
Yes.
And given the aging of the boomers and the demographics of the American Jewish community, where at least 25% of us are over the age of 65 right now, and living longer and living healthier, there's a real opportunity for trained clergy / MSW / clergy to really make an impact, because the other professions, the gerontological professions, geriatricians, professional healthcare workers, are shrinking. So there's going to be more of a need from us as we age, less of the professionals trained to take care of us. Somebody's going to have to fill that void. So, I mean, I would imagine that would be one of the big selling points of this program.
Yeah. Let me tell you, palliative care has been a real growth field. Mm-hmm. When I started working in palliative care in the late 1990s, palliative care was a small specialty at some hospitals. It has now grown exponentially. If one checked the reports of an organization called the Center to Advance Palliative Care at Mount Sinai in New York, one could see the growth of palliative care field over the last decade. Chaplains are an important part of the palliative care teams, with social workers, doctors, and nurses. And this is one real growth area for the healthcare field. There are potentially going to be more and more opportunities for chaplains to enter the field if that's where their interests lie.
Absolutely. I just was at a conference earlier this year from the New Jersey Hospital Association, specifically on spirituality and palliative care. And there are several hundred docs, nurses, hospice people. And one of the whole morning program was a clergy panel, really trying to mesh exactly what you're talking about. I mean, it was really like right out of the program, but people who are doing it, you know, and wanting to learn more about it. So the opportunities are really there. Is there a recommended time frame for a clergy person to take this? In other words, if you see somebody right out of school with no experience, as opposed to somebody who, do you say we really would prefer a student coming in with who's been around the block a couple of times, who really understands some of these, who's had to deal with these things? Or if somebody coming out of rabbinic school right away and say, this is something I want to do. I'm going to take another year and do this. Is there a difference? Are you looking for any gradation there?
No, we're looking for people throughout the spectrum.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. We have students who are in rabbinic school and might be looking to do this to supplement their rabbinic education. Or we have people who are at the older boomer generation who are part of the program and, again, are thinking of this much more in terms of career development.
I have found, and it's been interesting because I've had, you know, various positions in social work. At times I've done pastoral work also in healthcare. I've done much more social work type of jobs, but I do have ordination. And I've been able at times as a social worker to watch clergy of all faiths, but especially rabbis, deal with healthcare, you know, situations. And what I have found thus far over and over again is that when a rabbi, whether he's green or whether he is extremely experienced, when he's not comfortable with healthcare, he avoids it.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't avoid cancer, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's? Who wouldn't avoid that?
Or dementia or Alzheimer's.
Dementia, right. Alzheimer's. Who wouldn't avoid that? Or, unfortunately, if you're not comfortable, what clergy might not be tempted to use some sort of faith-based answer to deal with something that's more clinical pathology rather than theology?
So here's the other real hard question. Somebody's going to ask you this, I'm sure. What about grades? Is this A, B, C, D? Do I have no grade? Do I, just because if I show up, I get a grade, or answer a question, I get a grade? Is it pass? What is it?
Well, that's one of the areas that changed over the course of implementation. Uh-huh. So now the program is entirely pass-fail, which means, it means two things.
Yeah.
It means that one does not have to be striving so hard thinking, oh, I have to do everything perfect to get an A grade. But that does mean that one has to be a participant in the class, because if one is not, then that one does not
Correct.
Pass. By changing the grade system is one of the ways we've tried to make this more workable for people who are busy professionals, so they don't have to be thinking and worrying about grades. The other part is that typically in a master's program, in any graduate program, one has to be doing thorough research, academic research papers. The writing assignments that are involved in this course are very reflective and experiential and, you know, are not academic research papers.
Correct. Correct. Yes. Steve, do you want to add?
Yeah, I would love to add. You know, Dr. Stein had mentioned before that we're looking for serious students, and I just want to point out that at the heart of this, these skills that are being given over, the, you know, this, yourself and Wright and Dale, Dr. Stein, all the professors, the funder that's funding this, these skills speak to the fact and to the heart of the issue that there are people that are older, there are people that are sick, there are caregivers that need support. This is about helping other people in the community. This is about helping people who are sick. So it's an incredible opportunity. I'm smiling right now. It's an incredible opportunity. I knew how hard I, you know, worked in social work school to hopefully get an A. This is pass fail. I was in rabbinical school and I didn't have a program like this. No one, you know, no one created this yet for me. I had to juggle being in two graduate schools and having a job and getting married at the same time as getting my MSW. This is incredible. But you have to be serious about this, because this is about helping people who are sick.
Well, it's serious. The subjects are very serious.
This is helping the community. And I just wanted to comment also, in the beginning of the podcast, you had asked, you know, just about denominations. And this obviously is, this is a program at the School of Social Work. In addition to that, the greatest thing that I love about this program, and I have Orthodox ordination. I'm an Orthodox rabbi. But the greatest thing that I love about this program is that it's not denominational, because cancer is not denominational,
right.
And grief is not denominational, and tears are not denominational. And very often, and you probably know more about this, Rabbi Andrus, than I would, statistically, how many people are Orthodox, conservative, reform. Based on those statistics, most healthcare proxy forms, which have two people that you could write on, right? The primary healthcare proxy agent and let's say the secondary one, statistically, you're going to probably, there's a good chance that on a healthcare proxy form, you're going to have people, two siblings from the same family, different denominations. So that clergy member has to understand how to relate to people from all denominations, because cancer doesn't know denominations.
Right. In this day and age, they may not even, that second sibling, you know, may be married to somebody who's not Jewish, which brings a whole other dimension into the conversation.
Sure, it does. But before you get to theology, you have to know how to properly do that psychology.
Absolutely.
And that's the beauty of this.
Absolutely. Dr. Gary Stein, professor at Wurzweiler at Wurzweiler School of Social Work from Yeshiva, and for this purpose is the director of this, now going into our second year of the Rabbinic Certification Program in Gerontology and Palliative Care. And Rabbi Steve Frost, thank you, Steve, who's the program coordinator, recruiter, major domo recruiter for the program. Thank you very, very much,
thank
guys,
you.
For bringing us up
thank
today.
Thank you, Rabbi Andrus.
This is really exciting. And again, real fast before we close, if somebody wants to get in touch with the program and learn more about it, where do they go?
Okay. Steven, Steven, krul at yu.edu, and you will get the opportunity to talk to Steven in person.
And there's a web. Is there a website?
There is yu.edu/Wurzweiler, and I will spell that Wurzweiler. And there is a page for the Rabbinic Certificate Program in Gerontology and Palliative Care. I'd like to do one more plug.
Plug away real fast.
So our rabbinic program is doing a day-long spirituality near the end of life program in New York on July 10th. We're bringing in many of the leaders from the rabbinate world, from chaplaincy, from social work, to deal with many of the issues that we've discussed today. We certainly welcome people from the metropolitan area as well as around the country who might be interested to come to New York. You can find more information about this important conference at yu.edu/Wurzweiler.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. And continued good luck with this very, very exciting, groundbreaking program here for the Jewish community. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Before we sign off from today's podcast, I want to again remind you of an exciting addition to the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and the Seekers of Meaning podcast. We're now able to accept donations that will allow us to expand our work and grow the program's program of Jewish Sacred Aging. And we're working with the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern New Jersey, which is a 501c3 umbrella that will allow us to move into this new area of development. And we'll be rolling out a lot more detailed announcements in the coming weeks. But if you would like to support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, we welcome your free will donation. You can send a check to the Jewish Sacred Aging in care of the Jewish Community Foundation, 1301 Springdale Road. That's 1301 Springdale Road, Suite 200 in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, 08003. And you can also go to the homepage, jewishsacredaging.com. If you wish to donate on the homepage, go to the homepage, jewishsacredaging.com. Go up top to the menu bar and click on donate. And I'll give you just the directions to do that. Thank you. To all of you again, thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments to Rabbi Andrus at jewishsacredaging.com and invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. These podcasts are recorded at the studios of the award-winning Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we thank our producer, Steve Lubetkin. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Andrus. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Stephen. To all of you again, shalom. See you next time.